It has been said, if you don't know where you're going, it doesn't matter how you get there. Career choices require thoughtful planning and precise execution. Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group is a leading retained talent management search organization. Backed by nationwide market research, they also offer customized consulting services to nonprofit career candidates. Visit nonprofitprofessionals.com or call 866-903-3182. Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group, understanding nonprofit talent needs for the future. 866-903-3182. Welcome again here to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. It's a pleasure indeed to have on the line with me Laura Gassner-Auding, who is the founder of Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group. Hi there, Laura. How are you today?
I'm well, Zara. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's a pleasure. Well, for those who haven't heard my interactions with Laura, a brief introduction. She served as a senior vice president of execsearches.com, the web's leading site for mid to senior level nonprofit jobs, postings, and search services. Laura was also with Isaacson Miller, one of the largest search firms in New England, following being a presidential appointment to the White House Office of National Service, a program officer for the Corporation for National Service, and a member of the Clinton-Gore transition team and 1992 election team. Laura holds a Master's of Arts in Political Management from George Washington and a Bachelor of Arts in Government from the University of Texas at Austin. She's very active herself personally on a philanthropic level and also enjoys being a role model for young women and those involved in higher education. And Laura and I got connected almost 2 years ago as a result of her book, as she is the author of Change Your Career, Transitioning to the Nonprofit Sector. Well, Laura, today we wanted to really dive in a deep way, this whole conversation around stereotypes, the for-profit leadership roles vis-a-vis for-profit public sector versus et cetera, et cetera. So take us in that direction, if you would.
Well, sure. What we find is that when people are thinking about making the switch to the nonprofit sector, a lot of their friends from the corporate sector don't really understand what the nonprofit sector is. They think about it as if it was your grandfather's United Way or mm-hmm. Easter Seals or, you know, your friends that walk around the neighborhood with a can collecting money, when in fact the nonprofit sector is very different today than it used to be. And so all of those myths about you're going to deplete your retirement, oh, you're turning into a do-gooder, you're going to starve, they don't really exist anymore because the nonprofit sector is so vast and so broad that it really has been able to figure out a way to attract top talent. It's no longer the type of world where they're lucky to hire whoever they can. In fact, nonprofits are very picky about the types of employees that they take.
And what would you say, do you feel this is a trend? Because you've been involved in this very broad and diverse sector for so many years, Laura. Is this a change that's evolved over time or perhaps a state of awareness that's just come up, or is it just a whole bunch of myths and misgivings that people had before this time?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. I think that the sector grew out of a generation of individuals that wanted to do something different. They saw needs that were not being met either by the government or by the private sector. And so there are a number of people who call the nonprofit sector the third sector or the social sector, because it's not just not about not making profit. It's about making social impact. So while you have individuals that came to it because they were looking to do good, you also have individuals that are now coming to it because either they've made their money and now they're looking to give back, or because they felt that the work that they were doing in the for-profit sector, while it was lining their pockets, wasn't really fulfilling their heart.
Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, I know you and I have on private occasions talked about, and several people who are in the nonprofit sector, that just that whole title carries a stigma that is probably something we wish we could put to rest.
Well, there are a lot of people in the nonprofit sector that are working to figure out a way to define us not by what we're not, nonprofit, but what we are,
The social impact side. That's exactly right. Now, take us back. You know, your opening comment is that the sector grew out of a generation of people. So the differences in the generations that you've observed over these, 20-plus years, if you've worked in various sectors, how has that really, come to the fore now, particularly now with four different generations in the workplace quite often now?
Well, I think that the biggest change in the sector that we've seen are the individuals that are in the sector now, either on boards or looking as boomers to come into the sector, that have worked in the entrepreneurship generation, the dot-com, the sort of startup generation. And they're coming to nonprofits, either having made their money or sitting on boards as funders, with this idea of how do you execute accountable, scalable solutions. So rather than individual nonprofits popping up all over the place, there are a number of individuals that are thinking about how do I take this nonprofit that's doing really great work in Philadelphia and think about what are the specific types of characteristics that are Philadelphia and figure out other towns and cities across the country that have those same issues and then bring those bring that solution to those cities. So bringing together partnerships between the mayor office and the Institutes of Higher Education, local funders, local corporate champions, so that they can take a solution that's already been proven and bring that somewhere else. And so I think the biggest difference that we're seeing is that there is this whole generation of people coming into the sector either having been in a scalable startup environment or now having gone through higher education and getting degrees in nonprofit management. It's another big difference is that 10 years ago, there were maybe five programs, higher education programs, that were offering any type of degree in nonprofit management. Now there's more than 200 institutes of higher education that do nonprofit management certificates, nonprofit management MBAs, public sector management, and so it's become a real career.
Yeah, exactly. It's been legitimatized in that fashion. Now, Laura, take us back to this idea of the accountable, scalable solutions. Perhaps you could cite a couple of examples for our listeners to understand an example where that is played out, because to some of us who are listening, we're saying, well, yeah, that's called best practices, and you have a company, and it just opens another division in another expanded market. But I'm sure the nuances are a lot more complicated because of this idea of really tapping into the heart and the soul and the people who are on the ground in an area.
That's correct. So if you look at an organization like CityYear, for example, CityYear is a national service program that works with kids between the ages of 18 and 24, and as part of the AmeriCorps program, it gives them some college tuition, some stipend in exchange for them giving a year or two of their lives to helping build their community. And they work across education, healthcare, the environment, public safety, all across the sector. And before, they're in multiple cities across the United States, but they're also in South Africa. They're thinking mm-hmm. about opening up in England. But what they do is they say, we would love to come to, say, Tucson. But before we come to Tucson, we need to make sure that there are needs that are there that are not being met by other solutions, by other organizations, by the government, by the private sector, et cetera. We need to make sure that there are corporate champions that are willing to bring us in and help fund us for the first couple of years while we get our footing. We need to make sure that the mayor's office is on board, that the schools are on board. And so what they figured out is that there are certain things that go into whether or not they'll be successful when they go into a new market, and that's successful opening up, but also successful in creating impact there.
Right, in measurable results. In fact, I can think of another example our listeners may be familiar with. We had a young woman who heads up College Mentors. It's based out of Indiana, and it, right now I think has 30 different institutions, primarily Midwest-based. But basically it's a program they take to a certain university setting, but it's a partnership between the local university and the public school system where they can then match college students with younger kids as well as around structured programs to infuse these less than capable kids or kids that come from disadvantaged families to spark that light about education. But to your point, they are very discerning about which communities or universities they go to with their model. And I think part of it would be quality control, but I think the other side of it is, like you said, are those needs being met by anyone else? Because the last thing you need is another proliferation of organizations.
Absolutely. Nobody's helped when there's just a confusion, because it means that the funding dollars are stretched between now mm-hmm. another organization. So being able to think through who's out there, who's creating solutions, what funding dollars are out there. I mean, it's like if you were looking at for a private sector business, or you're going to open up a coffee shop right next to six that are already on the block. It
right.
doesn't really make much sense. You're still competing for the same customer dollars. But it has to be something where the organization needs to know that there's a need that needs to be served. And it's the same thing to think about when you're thinking as a job seeker. You have to think about, if I'm going to make this transition, if I'm looking for this kind of experience, I need to figure, you know, you have to put your bait in where the fish are, right?
That's true.
So you need to think about what the skills are that you bring and what your employee proposition is. What makes you unique? They're not going to hire another COO if they have a COO, but is there a skill set that you have within operations that will help them be better? Because no funder wants to fund, you know, one half of a third of the IT position for the Boys and Girls Club of Atlanta. They want to say, I funded an after-school program that helped keep kids off the street in Atlanta. That's sexier. It's more exciting. So you have to be able to figure out, how do I fit myself in within this organization in a way where I'm not just adding overhead dollars, because that's just harder for them to raise, but I'm actually creating measurable, accountable, scalable impact.
You know, this is interesting, though, the idea that individuals being attracted to the nonprofit sector that actually are using clearly for-profit skills, the idea of knowledge transfer, of building businesses, of opening up new markets. My question is then, is it causing some sort of uneasiness or shifting in amongst, I would say, more traditional individuals that have grown up in the nonprofit sector that perhaps haven't had to deal with those kind of dynamics of change?
Well, it's a fascinating thing because there's an entire segment of the nonprofit sector that does work as what they're called now social entrepreneurs, and this is part of the Social Innovation Fund that the Obama administration created. How do we create more social innovation in this way? Now, that being said, there are the other, 80% of the nonprofit sector still operates in a way where they are very hands-on, very grassroots, one organization serving one community, and not thinking about scaling, not even interested in scaling, but wanting to serve that community as well as it possibly can. So while you have these job seekers and these employees and these funders and these board members who love working within the social entrepreneur space, there are lots of other people who don't and who are very happy working in those types of organizations. And so, these are the sort of the long term, the steady. I usually think of these as like the closer to the people in need, the more desperate the situation of the people in need, the more hands-on and maybe the less social entrepreneurial the organizations tend to be. Now, there are plenty of very entrepreneurial organizations that are doing the grassroots work, but you're not going to find the person who is the program manager for a domestic violence shelter, for example, thinking about how do I scale this to 17 different cities.
Precisely.
He or she is thinking, how do I make sure that we get more phone banks so we can take more phone calls when the Super Bowl is on and alcoholism is high, and that tends to be a time when domestic violence peaks and things like that. So depending on the kind of organization, this generation of social entrepreneurs may work very well there, or it might not be the right place. And that's a wonderful thing because the organization, the domestic violence organization, won't necessarily like the for-profit job seeker, but the for-profit job seeker is going to go crazy in the domestic violence organization because they don't work in the same way. It's just the wrong culture fit.
And again, that goes back to our old discussion many times on this show with you and your colleagues, is that, it's so important that individuals who are thinking about expanding their career, even if they've come up through a variety of nonprofit organizations, just like anybody switching from for-profit or even public service into nonprofits, that every single one has got a different culture, just like every single private company does the same thing. You just can't typecast or put them all in the same bucket.
That's absolutely correct. It's like saying the mom and pop copy shop, right next to the big Xerox corporation, is they both make photocopies, and they're very different. And so we often will encourage our job seekers to think about not just what the skill set is that they have to offer, and not just what the issue area is that really gets them excited and riled up and makes them want to change the world, but also what type of culture will be the best in which they can thrive. So do they want to work for a founder who is charismatic and changing the world and, blinders on to failure? Do they want to work for a startup where it's all hands on deck and everybody's moving a mile a minute doing every different type of job because warm body's a warm body? Mm-hmm. Do they want to work in a steady and strong organization that's been doing the same thing for 20 years and is going to be doing the same thing for the next 20 years and can do it because they're doing it well? There are lots of different types of organizations, and depending on who you are as a person and who you are as a worker, you may enjoy one of those more than the next.
So have you found, have used, because your firm, of course, is involved in executive search, that organizations, when they say come to you and they want to open a slate for, you know, a chief operating officer, let's say, or an executive director of a nonprofit, are you seeing an increased willingness or interest to have people from crossing the sector on that slate?
We are seeing a lot of our clients come to us and say, we'd like to hire someone who looks like this, this, and this, but we also would be interested in what you know about hiring people that come out of the for-profit sector. Mm-hmm. And that usually happens because they have a board member who's from the for-profit sector who has been very constructive and has worked very hard and understands that the bottom line is not just the dollars at the end of the day, but it's about the change that you're making in your community. And they've either understood that kind of mindset can bring value when they hadn't understood it before, or they might just be getting a lot of pressure from their funders who are mm-hmm. thinking about this type of scalability. The COO role in the nonprofit sector is a very new type of position. It can often mean chief financial officer. It can often mean chief administrative officer. It can mean deputy executive director. So you're sort of in charge of everything. It can mean program director. So COO is sort of the most nebulous type of title, and it's usually put in place in an organization where they're thinking in terms of for-profit thinking.
And so that would be one that you could see the slates being more willing, interested, and maybe even demanding that someone would come in and balance off that charismatic leader or the established staff.
That's right. The advice that we give to our clients is if they're looking for somebody who's going to bring in for-profit experience, don't list the position as a deputy executive director. List it as a chief operating officer, because the for-profit individuals understand what that means.
There you go. Isn't titles everything?
You know, if I'm looking at 16 different emails that are coming in with jobs that have, you know, I've signed up for Monster.com or whatever it is I've signed up for, and I'm getting these emails about jobs that are interesting, the one that looks like it's written in my language will naturally be the first one that I click on.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Well, you know, back to this whole idea, though, of back to the stereotype thought, and I think, you know, myself, my husband, and I enjoy helping out a series of nonprofits, but many times we're sitting there really confused about, okay, which one of the same numbers of nonprofits in this space would be the best place and value and right connection for us. In other words, there seems to be a plethora of organizations serving the same need. At least that's how it feels here in the Southwest. My question to you then, from your vantage point in executive search and coaching people, are you starting to see some consolidations and mergers, and I don't know if the word acquisition is even relevant in the nonprofit world, that can, you know, look for the bare necessity, I would even expect, of the economies of scale, you know, the cost of staffs and duplicate offices and so on, if you can find truly alignment of those mission and vision elements?
I think that as you're looking at where you can volunteer your time, I think it's thinking about first the issue area that, mm-hmm. that is interesting mm-hmm. to you. And then it's sitting down with that executive director or that program director, whoever it is that you're going to be working with, and really seeing if you make that connection with them. It's got to be a connection in the heart, but it's also got to be a connection in the mind as well. And then it's doing, I mean, what I do, I get recruited to boards from time to time, and the first thing I do is I sit down and I say, what do you want from me? Why me? You know, if you want a check, I can write you a check, but I can write you a check and you don't have to deal with me as your board member, because I'm a little bit of a pain when I'm a board member. I get into the meat. But if what you're looking for is somebody who can do a certain task or bring a certain point of view or write a certain check to a certain amount or introduce you to a certain type of network, be very specific with me about what it is that you think I can bring. And then if I can bring it, I'm going to bring full guns. But if I can't, then you should know that now, because otherwise this is not the right marriage.
Exactly.
So it's really having that very specific conversation. And I would say that as individuals are thinking about making their career shift, if I look at my toolbox and I have 80% of the tools that I need to make a shift into the job of my dreams, I need to think about what the other 20% are. So maybe that 20% includes things like fundraising, very important to the nonprofit sector. Maybe that skill set includes something like substantive program knowledge, because I'm really good at the operations, the finance side, but I don't have the program side. Maybe it includes public speaking. Maybe it includes experience with mergers and acquisitions, and absolutely, we use that term. in the sector. But it's thinking about that, and then it's thinking about how do I use my volunteer time in the most strategic way possible, so that if I walk into an organization and they say, you're really great at the finance and operations piece, we want more of that from you, well, that's interesting, and I'm willing to do that, but can I also get the rest of this experience so that I can use what's my very limited time in a volunteer capacity for an issue area that I love, serving a community and an executive director who I feel deeply passionate
exactly.
about,
you're
but also
connected
at the same time building my own skill set as well, so that I may not choose ever to walk through that door, but I have the keys to it if I'd like to.
Precisely. Laura, talk to us again from your vantage point. Granted, your search work is to place individuals within nonprofits, but you also do career coaching to help individuals that want to switch sectors. Is there a lot going the opposite way of people who have spent a significant amount of their career wanting to leverage, you know, the skills with heart, the on-the-ground connectivity, and actually switch into for-profit firms? Or is it more towards maybe some social impact ones that have more, are acquiring a feel of a for-profit organization?
I think that people are beginning to go back and forth between the for-profit and the nonprofit sector much more than they used to. It used to be that you were in one or in the other. You're the white hat or the black hat type.
Yep, that's right.
But as the nonprofit world has become more integrated, as for-profit individuals are serving more and more in this volunteer capacity and understanding that there are some nonprofits that speak the business world type of language, and as the for-profit individuals are seeing how serious the nonprofits are when they're using them as partners for community impact and marketing and public relations and all the rest, I think that there's this mutual respect that's being developed. Now, that said, individuals in the nonprofit sector have a leg up sometimes because there are so few people for all the jobs that have to get done in the nonprofit sector.
Sure,
that
exactly.
You find that individuals that are 10 years into their career often have had a lot more seniority and a lot more responsibility than people that are 10 years into their career in the for-profit sector. So while there isn't the training program, the very specific, this is the trajectory on which your career will run, those who are hungry and ambitious in the nonprofit sector can get very far ahead. Big budgets to manage, big boards to staff, major impact that they can make. And if they'd like to make a move into the for-profit sector, doing that in one of these social entrepreneur type organizations puts them in very good standing.
I would agree with that. I think the other piece of it, I liked your opening comments here to that last segment, particularly the idea of partnering between nonprofits and for-profits for community impact. In fact, we had a guest that's part of higher education in San Francisco, and she came out of the for-profit world first and then did public service work and then now is in a higher education setting leading one of their centers that's a family business center. And she says it's striking to her how sector-less a lot of her meetings and engagements are starting to feel, which I would suggest is a really big movement and shift.
I think that you'll also see that MBA programs look for people coming out of the nonprofit sector as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to sit there and really blend the diversity then of your cohort student base, you're saying.
That's exactly right. One of the stereotypes of people coming into the nonprofit sector think that, well, this person's in a management position in the nonprofit sector, they must know how to manage. When in fact, it's not necessarily the case. You know, nonprofits, they just can't offer the same type of professional development as their for-profit competitors. It's not to say that they don't care about their people. It's just, like I said, it's no funder wants to say that they've funded a management training program. So it makes it difficult. You have a lot of founding executive directors that have done really great work, say in Harlem, and then somebody noticed it, so they gave them more money to do even more great work in, say, Dorchester, Massachusetts, or, you know, other
sure.
depressed economies across the country, you know, Oakland, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, the next thing they know, you know, like Yertle the Turtle, they're suddenly on top of a $60 million international nonprofit. So they don't have that experience, and so they look towards people around them to come in who have that great management experience.
Which would tell you exactly then the opportunity for COO or sector shifters to sit there and reinforce that next stage of growth.
Exactly. Okay. And what's really interesting about this is that a lot of those founding executive directors tend to be part of the baby boom generation that are retiring at the rate of like 7,000 a day.
Exactly.
So coming in as the COO because you're very good at internal operations and management, and at the same time having part of your portfolio working with them on the external stuff, on the program stuff, on the fundraising stuff, allows you to create that toolbox so that as this ED, the founding executive director, retires, you might be part of their succession plan.
Absolutely. It's perfect. Well, great. Laura, thank you very much for that engaging conversation. Again, Laura Gassner-Auding from the Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group. And also, you can check out her book, Change Your Career, Transitioning to the Nonprofit Sector. We'll catch up with you in a couple weeks. Laura, thanks again.
Thank you.
You bet.
It has been said, if you don't know where you're going, it doesn't matter how you get there. Career choices require thoughtful planning and precise execution. Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group is a leading retained talent management search organization. Backed by nationwide market research, they also offer customized consulting services to nonprofit career candidates. Visit nonprofitprofessionals.com or call 866-903-3182. Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group, understanding nonprofit talent needs for the future. 866-903-3182.